I'm Julianne DeLynn Hatton, and you're listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. This series will discuss the prophet Joseph Smith and the authenticity of the gospel he restored. I'll be speaking with Michael R. Ash, author of the book of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Welcome, Michael Ash.
Hi, Julianne.
So we're about a third of the way through your book of Faith and Reason, focusing on the journey through the old world.
Right, yes.
And today we'll be talking about killing Laban and the oath of Zoram.
Yeah, interesting one.
Let's get some background on the killing of Laban.
Well, Lehi had sent Nephi and Nephi's brothers, Laman and Lemuel, to go get the plates from Laban because it had the genealogy of Lehi's family and had the scriptures on it. And they tried several times, and Laban, he threatened to kill them, stole their silver and treasures. And they went back to Lehi, and Lehi basically said, you know, the Lord will find a way for you to get these, that they're important. And so Nephi went back looking for Laban and trying to figure out how to get the plates, and he found Laban drunk, laying basically in a ditch or inside of the road there. And this was his opportunity to basically kill Laban in order to get the plates.
Oh, yes, the famous story of Nephi's dilemma.
Yeah. You know, Laban was there incapacitated, and Nephi knew that he could kill Laban and be able to secure the plates, but he was in a dilemma. He did not want to kill Laban. He had never killed anybody before, and the thought of it really bothered him. And an angel basically told Nephi that he had to do this, that the Lord had delivered Laban into his hands, and that in order to get the plates, this was necessary.
So coming from the United States, this seems a little barbaric, right?
It does, yeah. From our world perspective, you know, 21st century perspective, even from Joseph Smith's day, this sounds very barbaric to kill somebody. And he ended up, you know, cutting off Laban's head, and sounds like something that most honest people, especially a God-fearing person, would shy away from. So I can definitely feel for the struggle he probably would have gone through with this.
Now, why did Nephi have to kill Laban with a sword? Let's just kind of use our imagination here.
Yeah, well, Nephi knew that he had to kill Laban, that he wasn't going to be able to secure the plates without taking his life. And Laban was laying there with his armor on, and doesn't mean he was passed out, but he was drunk. And so he might have been able to put up at least some sort of struggle, wobbly, but nevertheless, he probably would have struggled some. And so Nephi knew that he had to make this quick. He couldn't turn this into a prolonged fight, couldn't stab him, because Laban could scream. He could call for help. I mean, he's the governor there. There's definitely going to be other people within earshot.
And then Nephi is dead.
Yeah, exactly. He would have been dead, and then, you know, he would have been able to get the plates, and he wouldn't have been able to return his family. I mean, everything would have been lost. And so to secure his life, he knew he had to get this over with quickly. And the smartest move was to take Laban's sword and just with one blow take off Laban's head.
Now, Dr. Nibley had some thoughts about this when he was talking to his Arab students once at BYU.
Yeah, he was telling this story, and Dr. Nibley recalled that after hearing the story about, and these are non-LDS students, and when they had heard that Nephi, you know, pondered this in his mind and weighed the dilemma, one of the Arab students asked, you know, why did he take so long to cut off Laban's head? You know, from their background, it's like, yeah, that this would have been a simple task. I mean, it made sense, especially in what Nephi would have been viewing as, in a sense, warfare. You know, that they needed something that was precious to them, that belonged to them as far as the genealogy of Lehi. They know that the Lord had made a way. He promised he'd make a way for them to retrieve these plates, and this is how he had done it.
Now, tell us about Laban's servant Zoram.
Okay, so Nephi, after he kills Laban, he takes Laban's armor off and puts it on himself, and so he could look like Laban going to the treasury to retrieve the plates. And Zoram was basically the gatekeeper, I guess. It said that he had the keys or the access to the treasury. And Nephi came up to him and disguising his voice, and of course disguised with the armor and the darkness and so forth. There might have been wearing a helmet. Basically barked some orders to Zoram to get the plates, and Zoram got these, and then they followed him out. And Zoram's carrying these plates for Nephi, and they came around the corner, and there was Laman and Lemuel. And Laman and Lemuel thought that Nephi was Laban as well. So they started to scatter. They were spooked, thought, oh man, we're busted. And Nephi calls out and says, no, it's me. Don't run away. It's your brother. And then all of a sudden, Zoram was like, oh no, you know, I'm in trouble. But he's figuring that he's going to be killed, because here was Nephi, Laman, and Lemuel, and he was outnumbered and knew the kind of probably the little bit of history that had gone on between Lehi's sons and Laban already. So Nephi grabbed a hold of Zoram, and he swore him an oath. He said, and it came to pass, is what Nephi wrote, came to pass, I spake with him, that if he would hearken unto my words, as the Lord liveth and as I live, even so, that if he would hearken unto our words, we would spare his life.
Now, I love the way you write in your book, at this point, Zoram followed Nephi without any problems.
Yeah, that was it. That's all it took, was making an oath to Zoram. And Zoram's like, okay, I trust you. And, you know, it's fascinating, because just by swearing an oath, you know, that doesn't make sense in our world of making a promise that you'd say, okay, I believe you. But in the Arab world, the oaths were everything. You didn't break an oath. They were very important. And they knew that these were covenants. They were sacred and they were powerful.
So they didn't have a team of lawyers back then.
No.
They made oaths.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little bit going back to how even in earlier U.S. history, you know, people could make deals by a handshake. Well, this was a step beyond that. This was an actual oath where you made a promise, and when you put your stamp of approval on this oath, it was pretty much unbreakable. You knew that you could trust somebody on it.
So would Joseph Smith have known about this oath?
I don't see how he could have known about it. In fact, it gets even more complicated than just being an oath, because, like I said, Nephi, he wrote that he said that if Zoram listened to his words, as the Lord liveth and as I live. So he's promising on his word and basically as the Lord liveth. And Dr. Nibley had pointed out that the Arabs actually would have an oath that would be either by my life or by the life of my head, he says, or by the life of God, or as the Lord liveth. And so this was a true Arab oath. And so I can't see any way that Joseph Smith could have known about this.
Thank you, Michael Ash.
Thank you, Julianne.
Thanks for listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. I'm your host, Julianne DeLynn Hatton, inviting you to keep the faith.
Michael R. Ash is the author of the book Shaken Faith Syndrome, Strengthening One's Testimony in the Face of Criticism and Doubt, as well as the book Of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Faith and Reason is produced by Tom Hatton with music courtesy of Arthur Hatton. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of Fair Mormon or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You can support this podcast by subscribing to it in iTunes and by rating it and writing a review. Questions or comments can be sent to podcast@fairmormon.org, or you may join the conversation at fairblog.org.